the no offshore turbines for Isle of Man pressure group is fighting to stop the Moher Vanan wind farm being developed. The group expresses concern about the impact of 87 turbines 80 stories high being built from 6 miles off the east coast of the Isle of Man. They feel that the developer Ørsted and the Isle of Man government are not being open about the proposal. Representatives from Not for Isle of Man and Garth commissioners join me now in the studio.
My name's Ian Strafford. I'm a resident of Laxey, and my interest really is in understanding the Ørsted proposal, but mainly how it's been progressed and some major issues associated with the project.
My name's Georgina O'Sullivan. I'm a resident of Garth, and I with other locals, had formed a residents group to protest the Ørsted application. Our group is No Offshore Turbines for Isle of Man, and we're here to go over all the negatives that we see this application will bring to the island.
Hi, I'm Richard Henthorne. I'm a Laxey resident and Garth commissioner. I'm here along with Marinda Farragher to support the views of what we feel are Garth residents' views on the Ørsted proposal, and to try and get people listening to understand exactly what's proposed by this development.
And my name's Marinda Farragher. I'm the vice chairman of Garth. I am worried about the impact on Garth, but I'm worried about the impact on the whole island. This is the first one in our seas. It's probably in the wrong place, too big, and we've got to get it right.
I mean, the obvious first question is that there will be lots of people listening to this who think that we would be far better off relying on our own energy supplies. Renewable energy seems to be something that many people think is a good idea. What would you say to them? I mean, why is this proposal so bad, would you say?
I think that first, I think it's really important to say is that we're not here against renewable energy. I'd say that right at the outset. We all understand about climate change. We all understand that it's important that we move away from fossil fuels. But in terms of supplying energy for the Isle of Man, the Ørsted proposal, Moher Vanan Wind Farm, when it was originally signed with the Manx government in 2015, was clear that the power was for the United Kingdom. It was not for the Isle of Man. The deal for the Isle of Man was to host a renewable energy project in our waters in exchange for money.
And the reason for the energy going to the UK, as far as I understood anyway, was because the MUA said they didn't want it. Is that right? Or
so again, I think a bit of information which people may or may not know is in 2023. The government commissioned a report in terms of how we would do our renewable energy transition for the Isle of Man. And in that report, they look at what the energy prediction is in terms of what we would need on the island out to 2050. And the answer was, compared to 2019, the prediction showed we would use between 1% and 9% less power by 2050. So we have to decarbonise by 2030. Moher Vanan does not become available until the mid-2030s to late-2030s, so it can't contribute. And by 2050, if we've already decarbonised by 2030, then we don't need that additional power.
OK. I mean, you established the group. What was your thinking in doing that?
Well, basically, we, as a group of people within Garth, and even Douglas and Onken, we couldn't understand why we knew so little about what had been in process, what was planned. We were told, oh well, there were public consultations, but they'd either passed us by or people hadn't understood what was being offered to them in those public consultations. So we thought, well, we have to do something. So we started this grassroots information sharing online social media group, which, however pathetic that might sound, has turned into the mouse that roared, because we've now got about 5,500 people who've now learned what's involved and have said, no, we don't want it. And compared to the result that came out of Orsted and the government's public consultation of 477 responses, of those, 75% of those were not in favour of the proposal. We feel that there was a complete information deficit to the island. People just didn't know what was being offered. If they had any understanding of it at all, they were being told it will be green energy for the island, it will give us energy security, it will help with our net zero benefits, which we now know isn't the case because this is all going to the UK. We can't afford the infrastructure costs to actually, if they do land the energy on the island, we can't really afford to get that to Polrose and use it and store the extra energy that we don't need. So we've been carrying on with that, and we've now got nearly 2,000 followers on Facebook, and it's sort of building its momentum. But we need more people to understand, and that's what we're doing together with GARF. We're trying to build on the public consultation portion of things to make sure everybody knows about it.
Richard, then, you, as a public representative, you must be aware that there are some people in your constituency that think that renewable energy is a really valuable resource and that we should be going down the route of getting it. I guess they'll be mainly thinking it should be on the other side of the island and not directly on visible from GARF. But how do you manage to strike the balance between acting as a public representative and understanding that there's more than one point of view on this?
Well, firstly, I'd just like to say that I'm one of those people who does support renewable energy, having got solar panels, etc., on my own house, and I totally support our drive towards carbon neutral future. But this has become really evident. This is not the way to do it. We had a meeting late last year in Laxey Village for the people of GARF to come along and sort of voice their views on how they felt about the proposal. There'd been a postal drop through the whole of GARF area from Orsted, a brochure about how the thing would progress and what was going on. And I think that there'd also been a consultation the year before at the Laxey Pavilion where people could go and view the sort of plans. But we found very quickly that most of the people at the meeting, and of course it's always true that only people who usually object to things turn up to meetings, were against this proposal. And so we decided to look into it some more, and we found that our neighbouring commissioners in Ramsey and Onken knew very, very little about it whatsoever at all. So we found we, as GARF, we were working on our own to try and dig up more information about what was proposed. We'd been given the whole assessment, which is a very, very thick document of a very technical paperwork, which we've been given 12 weeks to read and understand. And that was very, very challenging as well for all of us to try and get to the bottom of what was actually being proposed. And we kind of realised that it's not just about the visual impact. It's about also, we've come to find through Not For Man group, that this really doesn't meet any of the agendas that they have put out. And to be honest, some of the material that's been advertised has been quite misleading, you know, and I think it's led people to believe that they're going to get cheap or free electricity, which it definitely is not. And also that it meets certain renewable goals, which also it tends not to. But one of the main things that came across at the public meeting was that the whole area of GARF and that whole side, it seems, has been kind of sold down the river for a fee to stopgap a hole in the Manx exchequer's plans, and we feel that's completely unfair. And it doesn't just change GARF. And I know people who live on the other side of the island might not really be concerned about that, but this is not the only proposal that's currently around the island. And you know, this kind of thing could appear off the coast of Peel within 5 or 10 years after our development goes in, and I can just appeal to people on the other side of the island to take note of what's going on, because eventually this might come round to your side and you could finish up with this behind Peel Castle in the sunset. So yes, we decided that we were going to try and get people's views. We've now found out an awful lot more, and we've also found out that within Mor Vannan's own environmental impact statement, they in fact admit that their proposal will have major and significant effects, detrimental effects on the view and the enjoyment of the Cornay, Mackled, Portmore, Doon, Laxey, major significant results and character changing permanently because of this industrial installation. And we think that's completely unacceptable, that you know that, this thing is going to be so close and going to be so large. And even more horrifying than that is that at night time in the nice dark skies of the Garth area, they're all going to have 87 little blinking red lights on them all night long forever.
217 lights.
Right. So there you go. So yeah, so we've decided now, just now we've got, in light of all this information we've now received from Not For Man and from Ian, very technical background, that we're going to have another meeting in the village on the 9th of May. It's a free drop-in session for all our constituents of the whole of Garth to come into the Institute between 3 and 7 o'clock. And see the update and what we've seen. And I encourage everybody, not even the people of Garth, but the people of the island, to come in and see what the proposal is and what the significance of this being planted in the Isle of Man's waters are.
Marinda, I mean, you must have been quite surprised to learn that Onken and Ramsay hadn't really got much of an interest in this.
It's very peculiar, isn't it? We can't work it out. Well, Ramsay do have an interest. I mean, they've put in. You can read all these the consultations online, and they have responded. I can't find a response from Onken, but I can read a response from Douglas. But I think the surprising thing was when we went to the hearings. There was the first round of hearings in March. There's another round of hearings in May, which is why we want to have the event in Laxey to sort of generate some interest. Please, will you come and listen to what's going on? So we'll be advertising those hearings. I'm getting on another thing now. The trouble is that it's been really hard for commissioners as well, but also the residents to actually engage with the process. And you have to register to go to the meeting, and you have to register to speak at the meeting. So it's just extremely difficult. I've only got a little phone, and I'm trying to read a lot of the documents. I don't have a computer at home or a laptop. It is hard work. Last night, so why aren't commissioners engaged more? I don't know that. I can't find a local authority effect statement online from Onken commissioners, example, who have a lot of houses. I can see them here out of this window. I can see all those houses from Douglas, the horse tram stables right up King Edward Road, right out to Groudle. I can see hundreds of houses out there that belong to Onken. They must have an interest in it. They should have an interest in it. But let's not just talk about the visual stuff. I'm really concerned about, to the whole island, what I know is going to happen, because I spoke to Dr. Milne at the Inquiry, who's the Director of the Environment, key player in all this, is that they are only 18 months away from writing a marine spatial plan. Now, the marine spatial plan will give our government the best idea of where, if we're going to have the seabed leased out for energy or for whatever, it's got to be in the right place. And the less damage to the environment. These are all the main shipping routes here, just here, off here. 17 shipping routes. We've got navigational risk. If you sat at that inquiry, I sat for 4 days and I was... On the Saturday, I was exhausted. I was actually crying up at the top of the garden because I hadn't realised what was going to happen to our fisheries. We've got the best fisheries, the best managed fisheries in the UK, the most important herring spawning area in the Irish Sea. The steam packet, the economic effects on the steam packet, who were extremely quiet, but we know that they have a government involvement. I mean, Manx Radio has. When we've tried to speak to anybody connected with government, they are silent. And it's just like Manannan's mist around this whole thing. You cannot find out things where, you know, it really is worrying where all this is going.
And actually, on that point of silence, Ian, it's quite surprising that all the MHKs have been told that they're not allowed to speak publicly on this in case they get re-elected and in case they happen to be part of the decision-making process in Council of Ministers. How does that make the people in your area feel?
Well, I've written to every MHK on the Isle of Man and the Chief Minister, outlining the points of concern that I personally have and that I know that the group has. And as you say, it comes back that a standing order of Tynwald, because the Orsted application is now under planning consideration, that it's considered to be sub judice, and as a result of which is no MHK is allowed to discuss it. And that the decision around this project will be made by the next Council of Ministers after the general election. And that if any MHK had expressed an opinion, they would not be allowed to vote at the Council of Ministers if they were to be a minister. So how does it make me feel? Well, it's really difficult because, just to give you an indication, some MHKs have written back to me and said, it would have been great if you'd told me all these issues before the planning application went in. To be really honest, that makes me quite angry because I've put in an awful lot, hundreds of hours of work to understand and could only understand once the planning application documents were available. And my question is why have MHKs not done that work themselves? Why have they not had that debate? Why are members of the public having to try and find and wade their way through thousands of pages of documents to try and assimilate what's actually happening and what the issues are? It makes me feel angry, but it also means that you feel very impotent. There's, what do you do now? Who do you write to? How do you raise the issue? What representation do you have? And it seems that the answer is none. It's a blank wall. It's, I'm sorry, you can't talk to us about it. It's now under planning. Fine, you might have issues, but nothing we can do about it now. That all just seems very wrong, and particularly with the timing that is the information that enables people. And we come back to the public consultation. The information that was made available, a public consultation is there to provide an open, honest and transparent sharing of information to enable the public to be informed to then have a say in what's happening. It's clear that people have not been informed. The 5,500 people that once they've got some facts have signed a petition, more than 10 times the number of people that participated in the public consultation, is in itself an indication that people were like, now that I know, I'm not pleased with what I'm seeing.
I mean, you say that people aren't haven't been informed, but you know, in comparison, you look at the proposed development for a wind farm at Airy Stain, where there has really been very little information provided. Mm-hmm. Orsted have produced lots of glossy brochures and materials. They've had road shows.
If you go to the airport, you will see, as you say, a glossy poster. And that glossy poster will demonstrate the benefits of this wind farm in respect to enabling the Isle of Man's energy transition. We know that that's not the case. We know that our energy transition has to have occurred by 2030 and this wind farm won't be operational till about 2037. But there's the only information out there is the Orsted benefits push from the developer. There's no balance coming back from the Isle of Man government to say, these are actually the issues. So when I write to the Chief Minister and he replies back to me to say, to be clear, there is no power agreement with the UK, with the Isle of Man. To be clear, any energy that we may or may not get is a byproduct of this wind farm, and that the decision will be made on the economic case. Is that on any posters anywhere? No.
Gina, I imagine that in the absence of being able to engage with your politicians, that gives you added impetus for the creation of your group.
Absolutely. It's a strange motivator to be absolutely out of the picture in terms of being able to talk to any of our representatives, but trying to wade, as Ian said, wade through thousands and thousands of documents to distill that down into some bullet points that the people who know nothing can actually start to understand. And it's been an eye-opener and frustrating, and we get angry. And there's a base of that group now, those 5,000 petitioners and the 2,000 followers, who are, you know, ready to march in the streets. But we need to do this in a practical and a logical way. And so we do have some strategies that we will be employing to try and move this forward in the light of the fact that we feel we've been shut down. And so stay tuned on that. But from a grassroots residents' point of view, this is a complete failure. A complete failure by the government, a complete possible misrepresentation by the developer, and people are confused.
Richard, then, in terms of that confusion, how are the commissioners going about trying to assist? I mean, you've mentioned there's another meeting coming up, but how do you manage to go through, distill all that information from thousands and thousands of pages into, I'm guessing, a side of A4, which is as much as most people will have the time to read? How do you do that?
We tried to remain neutral and positive about the possible development as far as we go, as far as we've gone along. But in all honesty, the more we get to hear from and the more we discover ourselves from our own research into the paperwork, and the more we discover from the more detailed information that's been uncovered, it's hard to remain neutral and unbiased against it. So we got to the point at our last commissioners meeting, which was just last Wednesday, that we decided that the best way to, we're pretty much as a board unanimous and convinced that this is entirely the wrong development for the area of Garth, and indeed for the area of the Isle of Man, but we're struggling to get that message out at all. So the only really way...
And you say you're struggling to get that message out.
Well, we've got posters out. We've got the not for man thing from the group's point of view, but from the commissioner's point of view, we publish it on our website, and it's you know, we have notes about it in our own notes, but we have to get our constituents to know about it in a more general way. So the only way to do that is to have an updated meeting with the information we found out. And whilst we do try to remain positive about the future of renewable energy on the Isle of Man, this development has become absolutely clear to us that it's not the development we should be seeking in Garth, or indeed the island should be seeking. So we're hoping that when we get when we have this meeting in May, we will invite people to a drop-in session, which we thoroughly hope that people will come to see, and even our politicians will come to see, because it seems that our politicians are ignorant of it as well. We have one of our MHKs who truly admitted to us that he knew nothing about any of the financials, and he's in the Treasury Department, and that's quite concerning. Mm. So we'd invite anybody to come along and learn more about what we've learned, and then make their own mind up, and then decide whether they think that they agree with what we've found out, or whether we should carry on to pursue this. But to go from no miles an hour to 1,000 miles an hour with 1,200 foot turbines 6 miles off the coast of the island is just far too fast and far too Disproportionate. Disproportionate is the word. And I think people will come to if it goes ahead, people will come to regret the decision that they didn't challenge. So it's a decision that needs to be challenged. As Ian said, we need more informed information so we can tell people. But the difficulty we've got about getting the information out is that even if we convince every single person in the Garve area that this is a bad idea, we have two MHKs, whether they support it, whether they don't support it, we don't know because they can't tell us because they're not allowed to, which in my opinion is completely undemocratic. So say we get two new MHKs come in and they're against it and they get into Tim. Well, they're only two voices in a group of people. They're not going to overturn a decision. So we need a much more informed for the whole island. And that's where Ian's coming in about saying that there's no government information out there, no balanced view. If there was going to be a balanced view, then surely there shouldn't be any advertising by Orsted in the airport or leaflets through letterboxes with no pictures of turbines on, lovely pictures of Macclehead and beautiful seascapes out, but no pictures of massive turbines completely destroying that natural historical landscape and all that beautiful area and our, as Gina says, our biosphere, which is at risk. You know, our biosphere status is at risk if this goes ahead.
Marinda, I mean, you said you sat through 4 days of the initial round of consultation or evidence presentation. What response did Orsted give to the comments that were made, or were they not, was that not happening at this stage?
They were responding, and I mean, and I'll be honest, because I was absolutely appalled to hear the representative from Stena. I think they had him online, and they'd been talking about making a commercial arrangement with Stena to go round the top of the array. And it was actually the examining body who actually prodded. The steam packet man was sat at the front of the table, like we are here with a microphone, and she had to prompt him to speak and say something like, "Well, you know, have you had any talks with Orsted?" And immediately the legal advisor for Orsted something like, "Well, we haven't had any talks, and because they've only got to negotiate the gap." So now the gap is interesting because it's going to make our passages, or it's just going to delay. It's going to be more trouble. It's going to be more trouble.
More cancellations.
It could cause anything. But the interesting thing is that, I mean, I don't want to go off piste a bit here, but it's very awkward again because the steam packet are owned by the Manx government, aren't they? So will they give in? Will they be, you know, are they under pressure to put up with all this?
But then the assumption from what you're saying there is that you think Isle of Man government's already made its mind up and agrees with this.
I'm worried about that. I think everybody has a real concern that we are in deep water. Think about the water out there. We are in deep water. We're on a course. How we're going to get out of it, I don't know, but I still think.
And the deep water you're referring to is Isle of Man government's general lack of funding or
lack of everything.
Right.
We're a small nation. If you saw the expertise that Orsted have got behind them, flying 12 people over every day, and our people sitting there, and the steam packet man sitting there, and not knowing what to say, you know, that's upsetting. To Manx people, to see that bullying tactics going on. I'm sorry, you know, if Orsted are listening, but that's how I feel about it. We are, you know, we're small players, and that's why we've got to have faith in the examining body to uncover every single thing that's going on in this process. I do have faith in them. I think they were asking the right questions, they were prodding, they were saying, what about this? What about that? And then, but it is going to be up to our own government then to step up to the plate, whoever they're going to be elected, councillor ministers, look at it all, is this right? But I just want to go back to the question that you asked about local authority, that it's very hard for us to get information out there now. It's almost too late, we're on the back foot. We were not involved in the MEMA consultations that were going on with DEFA, with DOI, years. We were only informed, I think it was July 24, they came and spoke to us, like they were doing all the consultations around the island, you put your glasses on, this is what it's going to look like. It took a year for us to pull together a public meeting. We couldn't get any government to come and talk to us, any represent to give the other view.
The local authority most affected were not invited to any of the meetings during the consultation. Mm. What does that tell you?
So there we are. But only last night I was reading impact on all these houses along there that I can see right round and out to Mackerel Village. Now, I know they've got 12 sensors out listening for noise at the moment, collecting baseline data, it's called, over noise. So it's quiet. Everywhere's quiet. You can read about the cattle. You can hear about the cattle grid at Cornet. So when it comes to the piling operations, it's going to be concerning. I know what kind of piling they're going to do because it's going to affect the sea mammals. That's where I was coming from. I was looking at the sea mammals, the stress on them. It's going to all the coastline right round Wales, England, you know, what goes under the sea. So that got me onto the land. What are people going to feel in their houses when they start the piling? What are they going to hear? So our people don't even know that yet. We haven't been able to tell them that yet.
And so presumably there are examples across the water. It's still in the water, isn't it? But on the other side of the Irish Sea, where this sort of work has already happened, presumably you can go there and find out from residence groups how things were. What the impact of the activity was.
But if I may, surely we shouldn't be having to go and find that information out. Surely that information should be being provided in an upfront, open and honest and transparent way so people know what the impact is going to be so they can make an informed decision on what they think. And that's just not happening.
But you would, I would have thought anyway, as residents and residents' representatives, you would want to understand what the other side thinks, because obviously the developer is going to say, don't worry about this, it's all within the required safety standards and this and that. But until you actually speak to the residents' groups who were affected by it, you don't get all sides, do you?
If I might... we have been speaking to residents groups around the world, from Australia to Scotland to Cumbria to the United States, and we're not unique. As soon as Ørsted have 30 of these offshore wind farms around the world, and pretty much everywhere they've set up, there's a group like ours that have got together as residents and tried to understand it, because it's the same story all over the world. This is a multi-billion pound dollar energy giant, Ørsted. They've got this down pat. They know how to push these things through to conclusion. They've got all the money. They've got all the glossy brochures. And governments, small governments, seem to just fall in line. And so we have to go back, as you say, to the people who are affected. Previously, over the last 20 years of wind farm operation in the world, all of the negatives of infrasound, noise and vibration have been anecdotal. It's all been, well, it's affecting me, my health is poor, this has happened. And this has all been battered aside by these large wind energy companies as not relevant, it's not true, and so on. There's new evidence now. Scientific evidence. It was presented March 24th at the European Commission in a conference by experts, scientists, and they showed quite clearly the effects of these noise and vibration studies. And it's clear that the effect of these is up to 12 to 15 kilometers from the site. And that's of the turbines that exist now, which are tallest in the world right now, operating are like 260, 280 metres. These are 350 metres. And who's to say in 15 years they won't ask to make them taller? So we know now.
Because that's the other point to this, isn't it? Once a wind farm has been approved, the concept of the wind farm has been approved, and therefore if someone wants to renew at some point, the size of the turbine isn't always governed by the permission that was granted. Is that right?
And we've seen that the original agreement, as we understand it, just from public reports, was that this was Ørsted were given permission to lease a seabed to investigate a 700 megawatt project. Lo and behold, they come back 9 years later with a 1.4 megawatt project.
Gigawatt,
sorry.
Twice the size.
Yeah, 1.4. Yeah. Double the size. And in that time, the turbines doubled the size. People look at the Walney extension. Tallest turbines there, which are, 20 kilometres away from us, 25 kilometres away from
they're
us?
They're about 30 kilometres away.
30 kilometres away.
About half the height of what
is
being proposed.
Yeah, 190. Yeah. So we can see those quite clearly. Imagine what 350 metres, 10 kilometres away are going to look like. I mean, it's just egregious. But as you say, once the consent is given, that mission creep or the project creep is sort of out of our hands. They could say, well, it's not efficient, we need to make these things 400 metres high or 450 metres high. It's just not proportionate or appropriate 6 miles from the Isle of Man.
Were you going to come in?
I was just going to add, if you follow the UK position, this wind farm is to provide power to the UK. This wind farm is being granted UK critical national infrastructure status. So on that basis, it will form part of the UK's power generation grid. Now, the UK, with its existing wind farms, is already at a stage for those that are about 20 years old. The power demand doesn't go away. So in order to maintain clean energy, what they now look at is what's called repowering the wind farms. So it's exactly as you say, the gearboxes, the generation piece of kit right in the centre of the blades, effectively the option is to just renew them and replace them. So we might be looking at an initial 35 years of wind farm in our waters. We might be looking at 70 years. And that won't really be the Isle of Man's decision, because once planning consent has been given, as you say, the precedent's been set that there is for energy generation. So we need to be alert to that and understand truly, eyes open, what the future might look like.
And you mentioned earlier as well about the Chief Minister saying that this decision is purely to be based on the economic case.
Yeah.
Do the MEMA inspection team understand that?
So in the hearings that we've sat through, and I've sat through, and Jean has sat through the same ones as Marinda has, probably a couple of things worth saying. Firstly, in terms of power to the Isle of Man, the examination board has specifically asked the question about power to the Isle of Man, because there's been a big debate about would it come in at Port Skillion, would it come in at Groudal, etc. And Ørsted have said we want to rule out Port Skillion, we just want to use Groudal. But it would be up to MUA to do that link from Groudal through to, say, Pullrose Middle River. And there's been a big debate about it and whether it would happen and whether it wouldn't happen. And clearly there is no agreement on that at the moment. But Ørsted's response was quite enlightening. Their legal team were very clear, and I would try and remember the quote exactly, but it was something along the lines of, it does not matter whether power comes to the Isle of Man or not. The primary purpose of this project is to provide power to the UK, and that is what the project's about. Now, the examining board did sort of say, well, the Isle of Man might have an interest in whether or not they get power or not. But the project were clear that it was, it did not matter. It did not change the rationale for the project, whether we got power or whether we didn't get power. So I think it's quite clear where we stand on that. I'm not going to delve into all the detail of all the reports, which people can read. But I think one of the key reasons that MUA were keen to potentially explore a link between Morvanin and the island was for the potential to use the totality of the connection to be a second interconnector to the UK. And it's become apparent that that is not going to meet UK regulatory authority requirements, and therefore we wouldn't be able to use it as an interconnector, and therefore maybe it's not that attractive anymore. Because, as I say, we must come back to this understanding of the timeline, which is we have to decarbonise legally by 2030. Morvanen does not become operational till 7 years later.
But
and
of course,
that's pretty fundamental.
The requirement to decarbonise by 2030 is purely a government decision, and or Timmel decision, and Timmel can change that decision.
Well, they can, but it's in the Climate Change Act, so it's currently a legal requirement. And yes, we would have to change the law restate the Climate Change Act of 21. And again, it's. From my understanding of reading about this stuff, the reason that the government commissioned the AREP report in 2023 was to understand what our scenarios and options were to be able to decarbonise by 2030. So there is work in train, and none of those options included a Morvanen wind farm. It comes back to what Richard said earlier. You know, part of the options are the solar panels on the top of the NSC and so on. And that latest announcement references back to that work done in 2023. So we need to be clear, what is the government strategy? What are we following? Which path are we going down, against which we then make decisions?
And this is one of the areas that we don't know, isn't it?
Correct.
This is all this mist again around
yes.
it, that we can't... It's not clear. It is just not clear. The government aren't saying things. You can read and read and read the answers to the examining body's written questions and try to tease out...
The only thing that is clear is that this is about money. This is about selling the seabed, the Isle of Man's long fought for 12-mile limit seabed, prime queenie ground, prime fishing ground, money to top up that. And I can see the point of that, and I can see why they don't want to go so much down the grant route for everybody to get, which is what the UK are doing, a grant for everybody to get solar panels on their roof and all this kind of thing, because that will cost them money, whereas they're receiving money for doing nothing here. But this is not the answer for the Isle of Man. And as Ian has just said, this is a power station in the Irish Sea, right off the coast of the Isle of Man, extremely overbearing for the UK, to provide electricity for the UK. And it's not green electricity for the Isle of Man. Let's get that clear. It's not. It's just electricity. If we don't land the cable here, it goes to the UK. We can buy it back through our interconnector. It doesn't come out with little green three legs on it out of the plug. It's just electricity. It's not green electricity. But we have to get that clear with everybody. This is a thing about money for the underwater seabed thing, and it's just unacceptable for the Isle of Man as a whole, not just for Garth, but for the Isle of Man as a whole, to sell off their seabed all around the island if they're going to do other projects for money. It's not acceptable. Find another way of saving that money. It's what, 1% of GDP, less? Less than 1% of GDP over the lifetime of the entire project. It's completely and utterly unacceptable to sell off our heritage, our beautiful seascape and horizons for money to stopgap a hole. We have to come up with another plan. And the other plan is, we're not saying we can't do renewables. We have to find a way of people generating their own electricity, or to have more, you know, sort of insular electricity generation. You know, the panels on top of the reservoir, and things like that, and go forward into the future and make these decisions and make our use on electricity much less reliant on the power station. If we get these wind turbines in there, we can't turn off our power station. We still have to have that for resilience, for bounce. You know, if the wind doesn't blow, all the lights will go out. So it's not going to switch off the power station. So
and what is that figure? Because I mean we're hearing about 1% of GDP. I mean, has the actual figure that Dong has to pay Isle of Man government been mentioned yet?
So I think there's been a number of figures mentioned. There's a very headline figure that has been out on various news outlets of £2 billion to the Isle of Man over 35 years. We clearly don't have, and again, I have written to MHKs, I've written to the Chief Minister, because one of the most fundamental documents underlying this, as we know, is the Agreement for Lease. that was signed in 2015 that nobody is allowed to see, not even MHKs. So the basis of this whole project starting is not available for people to see. It's a secret. We do know that over 10 years, from a question asked in Tynwald last December, that £91,000 plus VAT is what has been paid to the Isle of Man government for 10 years worth of lease. Compare that to the agreements for lease from the Crown Estates for the Morgan and Mona wind farms, which are the ones we were talking about with this gap, in UK waters, where they sign on at £231 million to sign on and then have annual option fees to pay on top of that. They've just pulled out after 3 years of lease and have written off 1.3 billion euros in money. We've had £91,000 plus VAT so far. We know that the not from having read anything, but from what we've gleaned, is that the money that comes in would come in from lease payments plus tax on the profit that they make over those 35 years. So the question is when does that become profitable? There's an awful lot of £5 billion worth of asset to write down first. There's an awful lot of operational and maintenance costs and so on and so forth. There's financing on the capital loans that are going to be required for the company. So we don't know the detail on that. And indeed, when you read the Ørsted documents, they say they cannot yet underpin it for all those reasons. They don't know what interest rates are. They don't know what capital bill costs will be and so on and so forth. So when I wrote to the Chief Minister, the response I got back was, it's unfortunate that we don't yet have any publicly available data to underpin this £2 billion figure. But, and again, I haven't quite got the words in front of me, I probably could read them in a minute, but it was along the lines of, but Ørsted have guaranteed it will be at least £50 million to the Exchequer. So again, that's what Ørsted have told now.
£50 million
per annum per to annum. The Exchequer. Okay. Again, this fundamentally feels wrong. I don't think it's Ørsted's job to determine what the net economic benefit to the Exchequer would be. I think that's the Isle of Man Treasury's job. And I think the Isle of Man government needs to come forward with some underpinning, because on the current timeline, by January of next year, Comin have to make the decision according to the MEMA legally scheduled dates. So in January, a new Comin has to make the decision. And if they are making the decision, as the Chief Minister says, based on the net economic benefit to the Isle of Man, there better be some really good, underpinned, risk-assessed financial models which tell us what that is. And we haven't got long to know what that is. And at the moment, none of that is available to anybody.
We can't make those calculations because we're not aware of what the contract currently is. And when we ask for a contract under Freedom of Information, we're told it's commercially sensitive. How can it be commercially sensitive when it was signed in 2016 and it's now 2026? That's 10 years ago. That's a different economic background then, a different values to everything. And how can it be economically sensitive if it's over 10 years old? We should know that information. The Manx people should know that information so we can make an informed choice of whether this is a good idea. It's lining up to be another Liverpool landing stage. Ian has just said, you know, the amount of money we got for 10 years of lease of the seabed for them to explore the possibilities is buttons compared to what they get in the UK. It's already a mistake, that one. That's the first one. We haven't even started yet.
Well, we're almost out of time, believe it or not. What would Ørsted have to do to convince you?
I think they'd have an awful job to convince me, because I've read too many of the documents about the environmental damage to species on this island, and those are the birds and the mammals. Yes, I'm worried about the steam packet. I'm worried about people who live in Mackle Village having to put up with the piling. I don't have a sea view myself. You know, so I have to come from the important things. Mm-hmm. It's animals. Starlight and moonlight. It's our dolphins that live in these waters that have not got a voice, and they're using data. This big company are using international national data. They're not using our own fisheries data or scallops. You know, I just feel really sad about it. So they're not going to convince me.
Yeah, just one final thing. I just encourage everybody in the Garth constituency that if somebody comes knocks on your door this summer, ask them a question about the wind farm and the proposals and the financials on it. And if they can't answer or refuse to answer, don't vote for them. And I'd say that to everybody on the island. If they can't or won't answer your questions about the wind farm, the future of wind farm on the island, don't vote for them.
That was Marinda Farragher, Ian Strafford, Richard Henthorne and Georgina O'Sullivan. So what do you think? Is there a price worth paying to lose the view and damage fishing grounds and marine habitats? Would it be different if some of the energy was coming to the Manx energy market and potentially stabilising prices and helping us gain energy security? And what do you think about MHKs being told they can't talk about this issue in an election year? Let me know your thoughts on the programme by contacting Phil Gorn at manxradio.com and get in touch if you have any ideas for future shows. Don't forget this programme is available as a podcast. I'm Phil Gorn. Go to myosungeist.com. Thanks for listening.